Hi everyone, and welcome back to Into the Void. I'm your host, Ant, and you join me today for episode number 35 of my weekly audio diary, or A-log as I like to call it, in which I share my thoughts and observations about the world and this strange thing we call life, and also hopefully a few pearls of wisdom as I talk about some aspects of my own journeying, or my own journeys, perhaps I should say, through life. So thank you all, as always, for tuning in. I hope life is treating you well at this time, and you'll manage to stay focused upon what really matters, which is our own individual lives and how we interact with other people in our day-to-day lives, rather than all of the crazy things that are happening out there in the mediaplex, many of which I will talk about today. Anyway, onwards and upwards. I want to begin today by talking about a news story. I'm going to pick up on a couple of news stories in this week's episode. So first of all, I'm going to talk about, or in regards to a really important court ruling. So during this past week, the European Court of Human Rights, they gave their verdict in regards to a landmark case concerning the dreaded fake green agenda, or climate change, otherwise known as climate change. And this is in relationship to a group of older women, I believe they're from the sort of late 60s onwards, from Switzerland. And the case that they brought to the European Court of Human Rights is against the government of Switzerland, because they claim that the Swiss government violated their individual rights as women, and that the Swiss government failed to do enough to combat the alleged effects of man-made climate change. And furthermore, this particular group of women, being of a specific age and they're all female, they claim that they're more vulnerable to dying during extreme weather events like heat waves, which is claimed are on the increase due to climate change. Now, also, just to give added gravitas to this court case, and added absurdism, the little doom goblin Greta Thunberg, she was there to celebrate with all these ladies, and they were there with their ridiculous, I think, sort of purple sashes, and they were all ecstatic as the court case has gone their way. Now, the reason why I'm talking about this, I don't normally talk about court cases, as you might understand, from the European Court of Human Rights, because they're normally extremely dry and boring and have no real impact on our day-to-day lives. But the reason why this is a particularly significant ruling is because I believe, and other commentators have said this week, that this is part of an ongoing, this is part of an ongoing attempt by the globalists to sort of tie the whole climate change fake green agenda in with human rights. And I think what that means is that eventually they'll be able to say, well, you know, you're going to have to give up your gas guzzling petrol car like mine, my good old Honda Civic, which is 24 years old now, which I take great pride in keeping on the road, thanks to my fantastic mechanic Steve. Big it up to Steve. If they want to get rid of these polluting petrol cars and force us all to switch, or diesel cars, and force us all to switch to electric, aka battery cars, then now they can do it under the pretext of if we carry on, then we're infringing other people's human rights. And this is a very disturbing trend, because I think furthermore, how this may well play out, and hopefully it doesn't, but, you know, I'm not being a doomtard, but we have to be aware of how politics works and how scheming and how evil government is. And I think what could happen, as we see the globalists and their kind of political puppets around the world, national governments, what they may do, what increasingly they're facing a lot of backlash, rightly so, from this fake green agenda as they're trying to implement things like in London, the ultra low emission zone, or in Wales, we've had the recent introduction of ridiculously low maximum speed limits of 20 miles an hour, which actually increase pollution because it forces people to change gear, of course. But what's really sneaky about this is that I believe that national governments could roll out a lot more extremely unpopular measures against us, the people. But they could claim, well, there's nothing that we can do because this ruling has come from the European Court of Human Rights. I mean, you know, we'd like to push back, but there's nothing that we can do. So, sorry, our hands are tied. And knowing how sneaky psychopaths are, it wouldn't surprise me if this is the kind of tactic that they're going to use going forward. And also, it's interesting to note that this is that there are other ongoing, or this is part of this case that was brought by these women in Switzerland. It's part of an ongoing legal campaign to associate human rights with the fake climate change agenda. So there are other communities in various parts of the world who will also bring cases against their own national governments. I think also another point to make is it's also how we've already seen this sort of divisive language of during COVID as of the vaccinated versus the unvaccinated. So I think in this case, just to flesh out what point I'm trying to get across is when you tie anything to people's basic human rights, then governments can literally get away with anything. So just as an example, during COVID, I mean, I had people say to me, people who got a bit angry because I hadn't taken a particular fake vax or a particular medical procedure, they would get angry and say, well, what about my human rights? Because I'm not protected from you, the unvaccinated. You're being irresponsible because you're infringing my human rights. So likewise, all the ridiculous greenies who are swallowing the fake green agenda could say, your unwillingness to give up your old gas guzzling petrol Honda Civic is, you know, diminishing or is impacting upon my human rights, and it means that I might not live a long life because you're, through your selfish actions, you're helping to increase the carbon in the atmosphere, and you're helping to increase the harsh effects of climate change. So yeah, this is really, from my perspective, I think this is quite a disturbing development. And it's also, it's a bit like when the mayor of London introduced the latest, a few months ago now, I think, the latest extension of the ultra low emission zone in Greater London. So now you pay a fee basically as soon as you enter any of the outer London boroughs, which are just inside the London Orbital route, otherwise known as the M25. I forget what it is. I think it's about £12.50, and it doesn't matter how many times you cross over the border into one of the outer London boroughs, you have to pay it repeatedly. Now, at the time, I remember seeing something, I think it was on the BBC News, and they were speaking to a resident in one of these boroughs. I can't remember where it was. And of course, being the BBC, it was a recent emigre from an African country, a woman with a very thick West African accent. And she was talking about how all this pollution is affecting her child's asthma. I mean, you can hear I suffer from asthma myself. But this again, and she was talking about the human rights of her daughter being impacted by the worst effects of climate change. So what the system does, and especially through the mainstream media, they'll pick up deliberately emotive instances and then tie it to climate change, like with this woman's daughter. And also, as I've been talking about, tie it to one's own individual human rights. And on that basis, you can literally introduce anything you like. So obviously watch this space as always, which is what I always say. Because we need to keep our eyes on the prize and watch what's happening within the culture wars, and not just say, well, I don't watch the news, or I don't take any interest in what's going on, what the news media are covering, what people are talking about in day-to-day society. And I think, well, that can be a little bit short-sighted if we're only talking about these, more, bigger, maybe kind of new age spiritual themes, or some of the more wackier, kind of truther or twofer themes. We need to keep our feet in the soil, so to speak. So that's the first news story I want to bring to you guys this week. Hopefully of interest. Hope it's of some interest to you all. And the second one is a news story that's just been breaking in the last few hours. News from the Middle East. When isn't there news from the Middle East? I hear you cry. Yeah, I'm with you on that one. So this is in relationship to so back on April the 1st, Israel bombed the Iranian consulate building in Damascus in Syria. And since then, for the last 2 weeks, all we've heard of in the mainstream media is about how Iran's revenge is coming, and Israel is going to be attacked in some form. And in the last few days, we've seen, the red banner on the 24-hour news networks about how a drone and a missile attack from Iran upon Israeli soil is imminent. Now, my perspective on all of this, I tried to take a dispassionate view, because as with everything I talk about in life, there are multiple levels of understandings, perhaps I should say, which I believe is often lost online in alternative media, on social media, whenever I peruse, which I very rarely do these days, whenever I peruse Facebook. And often I'm quite horrified at what I see. Anyway, I think along with these so-called attacks by Houthi, sounds like something you say when you clear your throat, these so-called Iranian-backed Houthi rebels in Yemen, I think a lot of what this is, the metaphor I'm going to use, it's actually not a metaphor. Well, it is partly a metaphor, but it's partly real is Kabuki theater. I think it's spelled Kibuki. Now, this is actually a real thing, Kabuki theater in Japan. But in terms of today's conversation, it's a metaphor for political posturing, grandstanding, and it's kind of like anything pointing to hollow, lacking substance. So basically, just what politics tends to be, which is dark arts, or what other people call theatrics, and what I believe again is we're being played by both sides. So just let me explain here. Hopefully, this will make some sense. I believe that the whole Iran versus Israel thing is very much a fake paradigm, like from decades past, East versus West, or capitalism versus communism, or Labour versus Conservative, or Democrat versus Republic, or even in a marketing sense, Pepsi versus Coca-Cola. Do you remember those advertising campaigns from back in the day, from back in the 1980s, I believe? And this is just a classic example of how the system works. We always have to choose a side. And by choosing a side, we are we are basically emotionally investing in an issue. And then we can then basically the system's got our hooks, and that's where it's like these sucker points. Think of the Matrix, when those gross scenes when all these tendrils, is that the word, or sucker points were removed from Neo's body. So it's just a point of, then it becomes the emotional investment, as I said in a recent episode on my sister's show, Discerning Consciousness podcast, becomes energy harvesting or a louche fest. And this is where some people claim, which I do tend to believe, I mean, obviously it's hard to prove, but like this whole idea of, which has been explored by many authors and content creators, this idea of how at its core energy harvesting is really about feeding, as David Icke would say, the non-human entities that exist in the sort of parallel or higher level dimensions. And it is said that because they don't have the God spark, or they don't have souls, or they don't have a route back to the source, they need to be powered up, and they feed on our emotions. And I think, I mean, energy harvesting, as I said in that episode, comes in many forms. Most basic form is you know, people who support football teams or sports teams or whatever it might be, and they get angry and cross and violent when their team loses. I mean, it's all horses for courses, really, the same kind of thing. I just want to also bring in to mention this so-called, so in the last few hours, Iran has allegedly sent hundreds of missiles and drones into Iran, and none of which appear to have hit any targets, you know. Or I did look at telegrams last night, and some people were reporting that a few military bases, Israeli military bases, had been hit by Iranian missiles. All again, of course, unverified, unsubstantiated. So who knows? Who knows the truth? But sometimes you can get an interesting perspective on Telegram and Twitter or X or whatever it's called now. But for me, this whole incident now, so we've had the response, so we've had the build out, so we had the attack on the consulate building in Damascus from Israel. Now we've had the Iranian response. For me, a lot of what we're seeing now mirrors pretty much very closely, almost exactly. You may or may not remember, back when Trump was still the president, back in January 2020, there was this, there was an explosion. I'm not sure if it was in Tehran, in Iran, but it was somewhere in Iran. And it was a car bomb. And we were told that the head of the Iranian military, I think it's a guy called Soleimani, I think that's how you pronounce his name, he was basically killed, and a number of his bodyguards or advisors were killed. And of course, we had this same narrative in alternative media and in the mainstream media. I hasten to add that Iran's response was coming for quite a significant event. I think you'll agree, when the head honcho was taken out. Now, I don't think the Americans or the Israelis ever actually took responsibility. But it's obviously, it was probably a Western type Mossad intelligence agency operation. Anyway, so when the revenge, when it came again, like this so-called revenge event from Iran in the last 24 hours, it was a total damp squid. All we saw was a few empty aircraft hangars that were blown up at a few American bases in Iraq, and at the time it was claimed about 30 missiles reached their targets. Now, in the days after that, and kind of very, very strange information coming out, because Trump, whilst on the one hand he admitted to the Iranian attack, he also said, well, we can't confirm that there are any US military fatalities, but some US military personnel have got headaches, very strange thing to say, but again, it's hard to ascertain what actually happens in these events. It's very, very strange, but it is claimed, I mean, it does sound plausible, that Iran, through the Iraqi authorities or through the Iraqi government, passed the coordinates to the US military in Iraq, in other words, their bases, so they knew when the attack, where the attack was likely to happen. So again, I think this is the same kind of incident. Iran has done enough to please the mad mullahs, to please to please the religious maniacs within Iran. But I believe again, we're being played by both sides. It's just an example. I think that they're at the top level. There are agreed upon protocols within how different governments will act. And if you think about it, I try and think about these things as logically as possible, as dispassionately as possible. But maybe I'm being too simplistic, but forgive me. So think about the so-called power elites in Iran and the so-called power elites in Israel. I mean, they probably have quite a lot in common, don't they? If you think about it. And it brings to mind the 1976 movie or film Network, a brilliant film. And there's one particular scene where Mr. Bill, Howard Bill, the main anchorman, who has a breakdown on air and then he's exploited on air. You may or may not know the story. I'm going to be talking about Network in a future episode of my sister show. But anyway, for now, I'm just going to briefly talk about this one scene where you've got the main head of the TV network, one of the hidden unknowns, and he's talking to Howard Bill, because he's talking about some very honest things about democracy and about how the world works. And this head honcho guy, he says to Howard Bill, you have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and there are no nations, there are no countries. It's all just business. And I think really, again, this whole Iran-Israel thing, I think at the highest level of understanding, not a metaphysical understanding, but the highest sort of political understanding, or I think we would describe it as realpolitik, is that it is just theatrics. That's what we're looking at right now. The mad mullahs have been appeased. You've probably seen footage on the news of, death to Israel, death to the West. And also the religious maniacs in Israel who want to nuke Iran, they've been appeased as well on one level. So I think that's what we're seeing, really. And all those sort of truthers online who are pointing to this being just the opening salvo of World War III, I think they can wind their neck in as well. I personally, call me a contrarian, or maybe someone who's just sort of looking at things in too much of a positive way. I don't think the World War III timeline is playing out. I think a lot of what we're seeing now is just a distraction. As I said at the beginning, it's just about energy harvesting, getting us to emotionally invest in things that in the main do not affect us in the majority of the West. Does immigration from Islamic countries affect us? Yes, of course it does. But does this pseudo Iran versus Israel war, which actually there's never been any war between Iran and Israel, does that actually affect us personally? No, of course it doesn't. That's why we need to focus on our own immediate environment, what's happening around us in our communities, what's happening in our own kind of personal life as well, which I talk about a lot on these particular Into the Void episodes. And just lastly, in terms of this sort of pseudo war between Iran and Israel, in the last 20 years, as has happened in Russia, Iran has greatly invested in their military, and they have some of the most sophisticated weaponry, like Russia does, in the world. Because what these countries have seen is countries like Syria, countries like Afghanistan, countries like Iraq, because as we know, there were no weapons of mass destruction. Countries that have no real means to defend themselves, then the globalists or the tribe or whatever you want to call them, they will just attack and steal all their resources. So, you know, a bit like in the playground, the bully will only attack the weak kids. The bully will only attack the kids that they know have no means to fight back and cause them damage. So one of the reasons why I believe, and it's just my opinion, could be wrong, why this pseudo war between Iran and Israel is never going to play out in some major conflagration, major escalation, if I can put it like that, is because Israel knows that Iran could destroy Israel's main cities like Haifa and Tel Aviv in a matter of minutes. I think that is well known, and that's all part of these protocols. And just briefly to mention the situation in Ukraine, Russia, that's why I don't believe that the West, in the form of NATO, will ever directly attack Russian cities, because they know that Russia has hugely sophisticated hypersonic or supersonic weapons, missiles, sorry, I should say, that could wipe out not only NATO bases across Eastern and Western Europe, including the UK, but they could also wipe out Western capital cities in a matter of minutes. So I do think this idea of mutual assured destruction is a thing. And as much as, yes, I do agree that the world is run by crazy people, deluded people, probably psychopaths as well, but there is some element of self-preservation at the end of the day in the form of mutual assured destruction. Anyway, I just want to move on and just talk about why I think we should, and this is like a memorandum to myself as much as anything else. I just want to give a reason why we really do need to focus on our own lives, not focus on events in the East Mediterranean, in the Middle East, as gripping as they might be, you know, as fascinating as they might be, if we've looked at the history of that region. I just want to say that one of the reasons why I think the mainstream media talk so much about events in the Middle East is so we don't focus on the news that is happening in our own countries, here, for example, here in Britain. And I just want to cite one example. Recently, I saw a really good video from this guy. He was highlighting the issue of the housing problem in this UK, in the UK, and the chronic lack or shortage of housing, and the problem with it we've got that is mirrored across a lot of the Western world is that there's a shortage of affordable housing. Rents are going up, mortgages are going up, and as the real kind of rub or the kind of core of the problem is that in recent years, because interest rates have gone up, landlords have seen their mortgages on their property portfolios go up. So they've passed those costs onto renters, their tenants, unfortunately. And it's creating a huge problem, a massive increase in homelessness. And just people are having to, you know, maybe live with parents or family members or friends, or just sort of doss down on a sofa surfing. And it's a huge problem that gets very little coverage in the news. And this video that I saw is this guy who was highlighting the problem in Bristol, where in recent years, in a city I know quite well, because I lived there for about a year up until 5 years ago, So I know it very well. And he showed this area called down by near Clifton Suspension Bridge, called the Clifton Downs. It's an area of sort of Greenland, a very nice area actually, very, very expensive houses, sort of Regency type homes. So some of the most expensive housing outside of London, in this particularly posh area of Bristol. And there's about 800 caravans or kind of converted vans and small lorries in this area. And it looks like something from Hobo Land, or it looks like a traveller location. And of course, part of this is because Bristol is a bit of a mecca for alternative. So people are drawn there, like I was, to sort of find some sort of alternative community. I didn't find that. I found just a kind of sort of a reworking or rejigging of the 1980s political landscape, where it was kind of like just a lot of old socialism, socialists as well. So I didn't really find any genuinely kind of kooky, cool spiritual people, which was a bit of a disappointment, but that's a story for another day. But just seeing this guy's video, and also this story now of Bristol and all of these caravans, and of course, when you get lots of people gathered, there's issues around rubbish. But generally, most people there are quite peaceable, so there isn't any real issues in that regard. But it obviously locals are concerned with all of these vans and caravans in the locality, and you know what that might lead to. But this is just one tiny little example of many serious issues that we lose sight of when we're concerning ourselves with you know, patches of desert in the Middle East that have do not affect us at all. And because you think about the government, the British government, they love it when their people obsess about foreign affairs and invest their emotions in events that have no impact on their lives. And that means they turn a blind eye to things that are happening in their local communities. And just to add to this, there's a truckload of videos being put out there now about the urban decline in Britain. And this isn't just, you know, what's the word? Just, you know, negativity or doomtardism. It is a real problem, like I've seen in recent years. My local city, for want of a phrase, Southampton, just like the rubbish, the signs, the street furniture, none of it's kept up to any standard anymore. And a lot of Britain's cities and large towns are in a major state of decline. There's more, unfortunately, there's more homeless people, there's more drug addicts, there's just more people, you know, in real states of crisis, walking around talking to themselves. So Britain is in a steep decline, as as I know that a lot of cities and towns across other parts of the Western world are. And so it's so important that we don't invest our emotions in parts of the world that you know, has nothing to do with us. Yes, we send our love, and we hope that these situations can be resolved one day, but that's the end of it. I mean, I just also would like to add, just flesh this point out. Do you think, you know, most Muslims in the UK are probably just getting on with their lives and not obsessing about the fake Iran-Israel conflict, or even what's been going on in Gaza? They're just getting on. They're just getting on with their lives. In the same way, you know, people in the West Bank, they're probably, or any other areas of the occupied territories, they're not worrying about the political situation here in the UK. Of course they're not. I mean, they might be in terms of how they can get visas, etc. All controversial view there, but you know, I just want to finish by saying that I say this because I can get pulled into the map, as I call it, with any of these issues. And I have to say to myself, Anne, what are you doing? There's so many things that I need to attend to, issues around health that I won't bore you with, that I need to to deal with and many other issues like getting in some more money, decent income and things like that, that many of us have to deal with. And if we're just spewing our emotions over things that have no impact upon us, then, you know, we really are doing ourselves a disservice. So, like I said a little while ago, this is a reminder to myself, as much as it is to anyone that might be listening. So anyway, that was just two news stories that I wanted to pick up on this week. So now I'm going to return to one of my themes that I talk about quite a lot, and that is the black pill delusion, or the truth or trap, which is my phrase for the same process. Now, my mate, Niall Murphy, aka Mr. Opaque Lens, we spoke a little bit about this when I was recently lucky enough to appear as a guest on his show Through an Opaque Lens, and hopefully you've had a chance to go and check that out on Niall's channel, Through an Opaque Lens. We did briefly touch upon this whole sort of truther Christian revival. Now, I want to talk about that today in relationship or in respect of Puff Daddy or P Daddy or P Coombs. I'm not quite sure what his moniker or what name he goes by at the moment. And I've seen on my timeline numerous stories being put out there by truthers. Sorry, I'll use that collective term. It's as good as any. And this is by types of kind of the types of truthers who become, you know, they become obsessed with outing the pedo. So just very briefly, it's a story, I must admit, that's completely passed me by, about Puff Daddy, P Daddy. I'm not sure what name he goes by now. Anyway, but he's said to have been involved in sex trafficking parties involving underage girls and drugs and all the rest of it. You know, doesn't need a huge leap of imagination to imagine the kind of things that are going on there. Now, okay, it's terrible. And, you know, I hear that and think, oh my God, that's awful. But then I just cut off, not because I don't care about the people who may or may not have been abused, but because I know I have no skin in the game. But these types of people that have been posting stuff online, in this instance, Facebook, I think it kind of appeals to this religious mindset of the sinners, the heathens versus the saints versus the pure ones. And I think it also is an aspect of, I know it's what people have spoken about in terms of sort of like toxic truthers or, you know, truthers that are addicted to cannabis, and they may well have too much time on their hands and they just live in their heads and they're not living in the real world. And they look at Hollywood and, you know, Hollywood, as it's called, and all of Hollywood, they're all like Puff Daddy, P Daddy. They're all paedophiles, all of them. And then you see someone comments, yes, all of them. And I just think, for a start off, how is, you know, it's just not helpful. It's just a ridiculous claim. How is everyone in Hollywood a paedophile? I just find that claim to be ridiculous. And a lot of people making it, they haven't actually investigated any of it. They've just shared someone else's nonsense. Now, there may well be an issue of paedophilia in Hollywood. Yes, I'm not gonna deny that. That would be extremely naive of me to do it. But a real, shall we say, a real conspiracy theorist, or let's say a real researcher who really wants to get to the truth, if they were based in the UK, they would get themselves a flight out to LA and they would actually speak to people and, you know, find out real empirical evidence as to what's going on rather than just hearsay. And something else I've heard people talk about, and I do agree with it, is that I think, because it has this whole religious aspect, the truth of Christian revival, it's also people, if they don't like someone, then they just put their name in a comment section on social media, And they claim they're a paedophile, and they out them. And like someone said the other day, David Jason, he's a paedophile apparently. For anyone that doesn't know, David Jason, who isn't based in the UK, he was most famously known for Only Fools and Horses, of course, one of the leading characters in that very funny series. So they'll just put the name of anyone they dislike, and then people after it will go, yeah, oh, and them, yeah, and it's just a ridiculous, it's like the Salem witch trials. It's just a witch hunt, and I'm not saying there shouldn't be proper and thorough investigations once allegations are made about individuals, but yes, that's how we deal with these situations. And again, this speaks to something that I pick up a lot in terms of the whole kind of black pill phenomena, the truth or trap, is when people get lost in that, and I know from my own experience, it's because people are coming, they're not thinking clearly, there's a lack of clarity, there's a lack of nuance, there's this simplistic world of good versus ignore evil, sorry, and which ignores all the shades of grey in between. Because quite often with life, the truth, you can handle the truth, but the truth is somewhere in between. And I think that what happens with these types of people when they fall into the trap of the kind of like Christian revival, and again, it's, forgive me, I'm kind of like portraying a certain group of people, but I think if you're someone that A has too much time on your hands, you spend too much time in your head, you've adopted a very simplistic view of the world. I think it's the type of people who have never really been fully engaged in life, or, I mean, like me, I've never really had a job with responsibility. They probably have never travelled, they've never had businesses, they've never really had to make sort of life or death situations. They've never had to make difficult situations that would mean, the redundancy of lots of people. They've never really put themselves on the line. Because people who've done that know what it means to just get the job done. And sometimes that means doing things that means you're going to become very unpopular, but it's just what needs to be done. And I would just say that I'm not saying people like that or good or bad or anything in between, but people that've lived a kind of rich cultural melting pot, a rich life, they know more about life, and they know more about how it really works. And they know by doing that, they actually know. They might not, they're probably not necessarily interested in, conspiracy themes, the New Age, or anything to do with that kind of stuff that I talk about all the time, for good or ill, but they just have a good experience of life. So what that means is that they know most people are a mixture of good and bad, a little bit in between, and most people are just getting on with their lives, and they're not all bad and they're not all good, as a saying. And that's a lot of what I think I'm seeing from people making stupid comments or stupid allegations about so-called paedophiles in Hollywood or Hollywood or anywhere else. They just haven't actually lived a real full life, which means they haven't had many of the challenges. Because when you've lived a raw life, and perhaps this means, often this will mean, not only kind of running businesses or having responsibility, but this will mean having lived in different countries, having lived in different societies, having really opened your eyes to different cultures, different ways of being. So it just makes you a more rounded human being. I just think a lot of these true for Christian revival types, they haven't done that. So they haven't, what's the word? They haven't put themselves on the line. They haven't, they never kind of walk the walk or walk the talk. I can't re quite remember it in fullness what the old Hopi, kind of ancient American Hopi phrase is, but they haven't, put their money where their mouth is, if I can put it in that very simple term. So they just run away with themselves. So anyone that they believe is in their mind is a paedophile, then they have to be a paedophile. So that's just something that I've noticed when I recently perused social media in the form of Facebook. Anyway, the last thing that I want to talk about today again is returning to one of my recurring themes, and that's picking up on some of my COVID memoirs. So what I want to talk about today relates to how we know when we lived through COVID, it felt like we were living in two worlds or two realities, because we saw people, perhaps our nearest and dearest, our friends, following, going along with it all, keeping 6 feet apart, wearing masks, following all the ridiculous protocols, washing down their groceries and shopping when they get back from the store and all the rest of it. Now, of course that made us feel angry. Of course that made us feel quite lonely at times. But the reason why I speak about my COVID memoirs is not to beat up on people who went along with it all, but basically to remind myself and hopefully you guys the learning that we gain from it and the growth, hopefully. And what I learned was the importance of trying to get into other people's minds, those that were going along with it, how to not just be angry at them, how to kind of like engage on their level as well, and not falling into the trap of just wanting a kind of like total victory. In other words, the kind of people that were following along, the kind of COVID idiots, as we called them, the COVID normies, whatever you want to call them, kind of recognizing that they have a right to see things as they see things. And we, in order to kind of like be able to grow as human beings, in order to be more dispassionate, in order to just sort of send love and understanding, it's about having a maturity when we can realize where people are at. And I think that's a good starting point for engaging with people who are at least open-minded. So they might be, you know, still absorbing a lot of mainstream media content, watching the news, but they were beginning to develop a skeptical attitude towards COVID and a lot of the kind of protocols that were being implemented by the government at the time. And these are the types of people during the recent Kate Middleton Where's Wally controversy around the alleged faked videos and faked video footage of her and old William, is people, when I saw some of the online comment sections of newspapers, they would say, in inverted commas, "I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but that photo of Kate Middleton looks dodgy, looks fake to me." So you've got to remember, we need to remember that a lot of people, although they're not truthers or conspiracy theorists, they do have, you know, they are beginning, I hate phrases like beginning to wake up, but they are beginning to question things more and more. And if we happen to be lucky enough to meet such people, or we know such people, there's very little to be gained from going straight in and going, "Do you realise they never isolated the coronavirus in a lab and it's all fake?" Because at that point, you lose them. You know, we have to remember, engage with people, the level that they're at. And I have to remind myself of that, because we're not going to be able to, you know, we're not going to be able to have a total and complete victory. But for me, a victory is if someone I, it's never really happened, unfortunately, but there you go. If someone I knew or an acquaintance, or just somebody I happened to meet, you know, in a shop or walking in the street, and we happen to engage conversation, maybe at a social event or whatever, if they say, "Do you know what, Anne, I'm not buying all of this COVID nonsense. I'm beginning to hear more and more people, you know, having ill effects or side effects after having the Jabberwocky. What's going on here?" You know, so I wouldn't go straight in and say, "Right, by 2026, everyone that's been vaxxed is going to die." You know, I wouldn't. I would meet them at the level that they're at. And again, this is another aspect, you know, of the truth or trap, where people still, you know, oh, everyone that's been fake vaxxed, they're all going to die. You know, it's like, come on, you know, come back to center. And it's, you're going to actually find it's easier on themselves as well to just come back to center, be emotionally balanced. And just back to the point I'm making, because a lot of us so-called truther types, conspiracy theorists, we don't actually realize amongst the general population, their main horror, their principal horror or fear is to be socially isolated, or is, you know, to for their neighbors or their friends and families or social acquaintances to shun them, to be socially ostracized. You know, which goes back to whole the book, a very good book by Alan, the sociologist Alain de Botton, about status anxiety. That is the principal fear, certainly of your average Brit, that, you know, their neighbours will think, oh my God, the Joneses next door, they're conspiracy theorists. Oh my God, ho ho ho, chortle chortle. So we know we need to, you know, part of this COVID memoir little segment here I'm finishing on is learning to be humble, remembering the horrors that most people have in so-called normie world, being labelled as a crazy far-right conspiracy theorist, and recognising that, being open to that, not ridiculing them, because, you know, that's how they feel. We have to recognise the fears that the people have. And also, something that I've found helpful in recent years, as I've kind of pulled away a little bit, feel less of a compulsion to wake people up, shall I say, is I place less and less importance upon my own opinions about anything, Ukraine, the Middle East, COVID, etc., etc. As I pull away from my opinions, they matter and I need to wake people up, then, you know, I've found it's easier to take on board what other people are saying. Even if I think, well, that's nonsense, I've just created a gap. And in the grand scheme of existence, when we flip out of existence and wherever we move upon, do our opinions, do other people's opinions, do they really matter in the grand scheme of things? So just finally, if people do come to you and they're beginning to question things in relationship to anything, the crazy, you know, green Nazi cult, whatever it might be, I was talking about earlier, not just the after effects of COVID, it could be absolutely anything. It's just worthwhile remembering to be open-minded and not to hit them around the head with our, you know, our kind of like extreme truths, which may be truth, we don't know. Anyway, I think I'll leave it there. Thank you all for listening. It's been a bit of a around the houses, as always, but hopefully you have gained something from my audio diary today. So thank you all for tuning in. I hope you do enjoy the rest of your weekend, and I will speak to you all again very soon, of course. Bye bye for now.